Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Protest music has always been an important part of the movement for social change. It's often easier to carry a controversial and thought-provoking message through music than it is through something like a speech or a book, and it has the possibility to go beyond the choir. Today's guest, Kevin Vance, believes that protest music is more relevant than ever and needed now more than ever. But it doesn't come without a price, whether it means a bump in a musician's career or even the loss of their life. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about protest music. What makes a great protest song? What are some of your favorites? And do you think the message should be overt or subtle? Kevin Vance is host and producer of the folk music program, A Patchwork Quilt, which he's been producing since 1991. It airs on Saturdays on KALW at 5 p.m. Kevin has a special passion for political protest music, and he's got a very long list of songs prepared for us to talk about and listen to. And Kevin joins me here in studio. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Rose. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. So you believe that protest music is needed now, today, more than ever?
Always.
Why?
Always. There's a people thought for the longest time that protest music was something that belonged to the past, that belonged to it. It was an anachronism. People believed
that protest music was something that belonged in the past, that it was something that was only done in the 1960s. It's still needed today. It's another part of the social checks and balances in America and in the world. And it doesn't just come from the top down. It comes from the grassroots. It comes from activists. It comes from organizers who are able to have the talent to be able to say something in a concise way that people will be able to hear the message. A protest song can carry a message a lot more clearly to somebody who isn't very schooled or very learned or isn't paying that close attention. A lot better than a book or a long speech. It's to the point, and it's part of human expression too. In places like Egypt during the summer, people were making songs in the streets, and they could be a simple chant, or they could be people getting up on a stage and saying, "I made a song." And a chorus to sing along with. So it's just part of the human condition, no matter how unpopular it may be financially to some corporations.
Well, yeah, and we'll definitely talk about that during the show today. You just reminded me of the Dixie Chicks, and Natalie Maines is going to be performing at Hardly Strictly Bluegrass.
Love her.
Yeah, she's great, and she's got a new album out. But you talked about Egypt, and there's a lot of protest music came through the Arab Spring.
There sure was. More to find and almost too much to collect. I remember asking for some research on some songs that came out of it, and there were a lot of songs that were carried over that had been around for 50 years that people were singing that had been revived or had just been basic popular songs that people found a message in there. There was one lovely song that somebody turned me on to called "I Love the Life of Freedom," which sounds just lovely in English, and I'm sure sounds even more beautiful in Arabic. And it was a popular song early on in the 20th century, and people had revived that song just to be able to carry the message and say, "Folks, it's time to fill up the streets."
Well, what else is really exciting you today about protest music?
That the fact that people still do this, that a young singer will pick up a guitar and make a song, or that a rapper will make a poem and put it to a beat, that people still create these forms of art. They may not be played on the radio a lot. They may only be played amongst friends. They may be made into MP3s to be sent amongst friends, to be shared amongst one another. But people still create them, just like people create works of art.
Well, I'd love to give the phone number out because I'm sure a lot of listeners have favorite protest songs.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites? What makes a great protest song? And I was talking with someone earlier before the show who said, I like subtle messages. I don't like to be hit over the head.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another interesting question.
I love, there's some beautiful subtle message songs.
Yeah, like This Land Is Your Land, for example.
Easily.
Yeah. So what makes a really good protest song, and what really is exciting you about protest music today, and that I often think about because I go to a ton of music festivals and I don't hear many political statements.
Because usually they think it's boring. They think, oh, dude, this is like, come on, more rock and roll, more love songs.
but I do wonder, I often think about this myself, is what do I expect from a musician who has this amazing platform, right? And who has all of these people staring at him or her and listening to him or her? I often say, wait, say something. You've got this platform, but is that really fair? That's another.
I always love the hook from the old 70s song, Tell Me Something Good.
So give us a call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And we'd love to hear from you if you're a musician or work in the business. How do you make these decisions about how far to go, what to say, where to say it? Does it depend on where you are? Because the Dixie Chicks, when they got in trouble, they made a statement about George W. Bush in Texas.
That's right.
And if they had done that here, I'm sure they would have received so much praise. So we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And so talk about what makes a great song. Do you think it should be subtle or do you think it should be...
It just depends on I think what helps is sometimes what can hinder a song is the wordiness. Sometimes just as hard as it is to be able to follow a book or a long speech, sometimes a song can be hard to follow because some songs can be very long and wordy. It's a real gift for a songwriter, for a poet, to be able to make a statement in simple words. I have examples of songs that kind of are wordy but are still very effective, but it takes a certain talent, you know, and just it's a matter of taste a lot of times. You know, it's a hit and miss and it's individual.
Why don't we play one of your favorites?
Let's go to cut number one on the selection here. This is an Irish singer named Luca Bloom. He has a song that I would like to recommend that this become the 21st century equivalent of John Lennon's Give Peace a Chance.
Wow.
It's a powerful yet very simple statement, and it can be applied in office politics, but it could be applied in the Middle East as well. And the song is simply, I am not at war with anyone.
I am not at war with anyone. I am not at war with anyone. Go away, war plane. I am not at war with anyone. I give my love to Iraq and to America. I give my love to Israel and to Palestine. We could live as one between the sea and sun. I am not at war.
Wow, what a gorgeous song. Can we just listen to him for the rest of the hour?
We can. I can arrange that if you'd like.
Beautiful.
He's a wonderful guy. Luca Bloom is the younger brother of Christy Moore, who is an Irish singer who is also an activist and has done songs that have stirred up the powers that be.
Now, he's from Ireland.
Yes.
What would you say is the difference between the way the Irish have responded to a song like this and Americans?
I think it was kind of universal that that European songwriters responded much in the same way as Americans and said, this is outrageous. We can't the Iraq war, for example, the war in Afghanistan as well when the song was written. It was pretty universal that people said, we don't want a part of this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an awful, terrible response to an awful, terrible thing. And the result is just going to be awful and terrible all the more. It's not going to make the situation any better. So I think a lot of European and a lot of world singers from around the world were very much in solidarity with people in the United States and saying, we don't hate America. We sympathize with Americans in what happened in 9/11, and we also understand that a lot of our fellow human beings in America do not want to see America go to war again.
And again, that's Luca Bloom, gorgeous song, I Am Not at War with Anyone. I love the line, go away, war, please.
Mm-hmm. Just, yeah, and it's so polite.
Yeah.
So polite and to the point.
Well, we're speaking with Kevin Vance. He is the host and producer of the folk music program, A Patchwork Quilt. He's been producing the show since 1991. It airs on Saturdays on KALW at 5 p.m. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Billy Bragg, the British-born singer, songwriter, and activist, who's very well known for his political songs. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. What makes a great protest song? What are some of your favorites? If you're a musician or you work in the industry, how do you decide how far to go and what to really focus on? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Betsy in Berkeley. Hi, Betsy. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Rose, and hi, Kevin. I just had to call in. I'm a great fan of Kevin's radio programming. Kevin has a tremendous sensitivity to all the shades of political discourse through music, and his programming is just fabulous. So I just want to put in a big shout out for Kevin. I'm a singer-songwriter. I've been performing and singing publicly for many decades, and in the social justice realms as well as other spiritual and just general realms. And, you know, my feeling is that there's really a place for the hard-hitting, topical. It'll be old news next week, but right now it's going to get a lot of people on their feet. I think there's a great place for that kind of song, and I've written many of those kinds of songs. And there's a tremendous place also for the subtler, more broad, kind of what Lucas Bloom does, of getting down to kind of at the heart of it. And, you know, one thing that I love, actually, is political parodies. I've sung with Code Pink a lot, and I've sung with Occupy a lot, and I've had such fun writing parodies, such as a parody on Take Me Out to the Ball Game of Take Me Out at the Big Banks, which we used to sing
nice.
In bank lobbies during the height of the occupation. I think there's a real place for that, for the humor and the funny rhymes and the wit. And I think that's another way you get through to people, is to just get the laugh in there, like, oh my God, you're right, this is really nuts. But then when I'm in a listening situation where it's a concert setting and people can be a little more thoughtful, I'll definitely do songs, I write songs and sing songs that have a much more, I don't know, just a more pensive and, I guess, just broader, deeper kind of a range. I mean, I hope that's what I do. That's what I try to do.
Well, Betsy, so, what is your last name so we can look you up?
Oh, okay. It's Betsy Rose, and I have a website, BetsyRoseMusic.org. And, please, that's very nice. I appreciate that.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for calling
I'm a big fan of Betsy Rose myself, and she's right. She's a great wealth of information and of great music. And a good point also made is that sometimes the best protest songs are funny, that they're parodies of popular songs, and that's what worked for Joe Hill, who was a man who made songs 100 years ago on behalf of the industrial workers of the world, and his songs are still sung today. In fact, some people know his songs better than the songs that he was making parodies of in the first place.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Betsy. BetsyRoseMusic.org.
Yes.
And we'll definitely check out your music and maybe play a song during a break on a future show. Thank you, Betsy. Let's go next to Shan in San Francisco. Hi, Shan.
Hi. Well, this is definitely what I want to say. She Got It Said, Kevin, you are a gift.
Thank you.
Your way of putting on a program, it's so splendid. And it reminds me of something that came to me to say, praise is food. Praise is soul food. Praise is food for the soul, and that's what folk singing and Joan Baez specifically. I got to see her on American Experience. I had no idea. Not only did she have this angelic voice, she put her body where her songs were over and over again.
She is a true model. Thank you. Yeah, she's Joan, and she lives here in the Bay Area. I've always wanted to have her on my show. She's a very busy person, and she just recorded a wonderful album. It was produced by Steve Earle, who also himself is playing it hardly strictly and is a fine protest singer in his own right. And Joan still believes. I mean, she still gets called to sing We Shall Overcome or some other song.
I have to share this quick story. When Katrina happened, I was at Burning Man, and Joan Baez actually sang that song.
Did she really? At Burning Man?
At Burning Man.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Very good. And she's very good at transcending the generations, that she's not just an anachronism from the past.
Well, and speaking of Joan Baez, Shan, thank you for calling. I'm glad you brought her up.
We love you, Shan. Thank you for your poems.
Yes, always. Joan was at the March on Washington in 1963, August 28th, 1963. And while we've done a lot of shows about the march, about civil rights and all these really important issues, but this was really a watershed moment for protest songs.
It was indeed. It was indeed. Not only was it televised nationally on what eventually became public television, it was educational television at the time, but in addition to all the speeches, many musicians came up and sang. Joan Baez sang, Bob Dylan sang, Peter, Paul, and Mary sang, and many, many other gospel, you know, fellowships came and sang.
Well, and so Harry Belafonte at that time lined up black musicians like Mahalia Jackson, who's the one who told MLK, I have the dream, say that, I have the dream, because he wasn't going to say that in that speech.
Yeah.
And Malcolm X and others argued against including white performers, but Harry Belafonte ignored them, saying it was not in keeping with MLK's message of inclusion. So you had Bob Dylan, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and others sitting right next to the black performers.
Yeah, and that's the way it was. That was an excellent way of setting the image and saying that this is an American movement. It's not just it's a movement for the dignity of all Americans. And that was the message, I'm sure, that came through musically as well as in spoken word.
So what really stands out for you when you look at this period in history?
There was so much. There was so much that was embraced and that was I think a lot of that music was held back during the 1950s, during the Great Red Scare, and all of a sudden in the early 1960s, all of a sudden there was such an appetite for protest music. I mean, it for a while people thought it was trendy, that it was coming down from the corporate offices and saying, let's churn out more protest music because it's making a lot of money. But people were so hungry for it. We had a new president at the time. He was young. He was idealistic. A lot of people who were born after the war were growing up and were no longer children, were starting to think independently. And this was the music that took on, and it still is. That's kind of, you know, an explanation for why sometimes we call it the great folk scare of the 1960s. That was the music at the time. Everybody seemed to have guitars, whether it was inspired by Bob Dylan or the Beatles.
Mm. We're talking about protest music and protest songs with Kevin Vance, host and producer of the folk music program A Patchwork Quilt. It airs on Saturdays on KALW at 5 p.m. Kevin has been producing this show since 1991. And if you'd like to share your favorite protest song, what makes a great song, how do political statements on stage and protest music, how do they affect you? What's really been powerful for you? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jaime in Santa Rosa couldn't stay on. He wanted to recommend Sage Francis's song, Makeshift Patriot.
Ooh, I love it when somebody tells me about somebody I didn't know about before. So
yeah,
thank you for that.
I don't know that one either. Thank you. We'll find it and put a link on the website after the show. And James in Santa Cruz couldn't stay on, but he loves Joni Mitchell singing about paved paradise and put up a parking lot, and Bruce Springsteen singing about miners' rights.
Yes, yes. Those are the Big Yellow Taxi was the Joni Mitchell song, and Bruce Springsteen has taken on a lot of work to sing songs for, you know, about working people and not just singing about driving cars and hang out with girls and stuff.
Well, you have Bruce Springsteen's on your list.
I do have him on my
list. We Shall Overcome.
He did something really interesting with this song. If we can, cut number 10 on this selection. Bruce Springsteen sings We Shall Overcome, which is one of those songs that it really takes an important person to sing. He sings it very intimately. Instead of getting like Pete Seeger's trying to get everybody to sing along, he sings it, "Darling, deep in my heart, I do believe." And this song has actually been embraced by cancer patients and saying, we're going to overcome the adversities of the medication, we're going to overcome the disease, or we're going to overcome the suffering that comes from the disease. So let's just listen to this for a second. Bruce Springsteen, We Shall Overcome.
It was back in 1942, I was part of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. Captain said you got a boy.
This is a lovely song. This is a man named Richard Schindel, who was a great American folk singer, doing a version of a Pete Seeger song called Waist Deep in the Big Muddy, which was a very popular song. Became a very popular song again in the early 2000s during the Iran-Iraq War. It was a song that Pete Seeger tried to sing on national television in the late 1960s, and it was obviously about Vietnam, although the story is about soldiers being killed because of an oversight in basic training. That's a lovely song, and so many people did versions of that song. What we'll hear now on cut number 10 there is Bruce Springsteen, We Shall Overcome.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Darling,
anybody could sing the song, but sometimes it takes somebody of great importance to actually sing it. Another great memory that I have of the song We Shall Overcome, I remember I was doing sound design for a play back in college, and it was around the 1960s, and we needed to create a little sound bite of somebody singing We Shall Overcome, and I asked my fellow students in the theater department in my community college to sing the song, and a couple of people actually didn't know the song, and I was surprised. I thought, didn't you sing it every day in school like I did in the Berkeley schools? I said, no, I went to school in Alameda. I never learned that song.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because these songs can teach students, you know, high school students, college students, about different movements throughout history.
That's right. In fact, a project I'm working on right now is I'm going to be doing a similar presentation like this at the Alameda County Library in Fremont. It'll be the third week of October, October 19th, I think it is. And I imagine that I'm going to be telling people about these songs, people who had never heard these songs before.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get that date for sure, because I'm sure a lot of people would love to come see you, Kevin.
That'd be great.
And we're going to take a break, and I'd love, after the break, we're going to be joined by Billy Bragg, the British-born singer, songwriter, and activist who's very well known for his political songs. I'll also ask Kevin, you did a great show that I loved about protest music under Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
Which doesn't really get much attention because so much of the focus is on the 60s. But in your show, you said there was a ton of protest music, maybe even more under Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
So we'll talk about that after the break. And we'd love to hear from you. What are some of your favorite protest songs, and what makes a great protest song? It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call, a program that depends and relies on engaged listeners. We'd like to invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can post your question or comment at yourcallradio.org, where you will also find links related to today's show.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable, and we'll be discussing media coverage of the government shutdown. How are the media shaping the conversation about the federal budget and budget cuts? Who's getting the most attention? If you saw a story that you really thought did a good job of putting all of this into context and going beyond, this is a partisan issue, please send it to feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll also talk about coverage of U.S.-Iran relations. And then on Monday, we'll speak with members of the Occupy movement. It's been 2 years since the Occupy movement began. We'll talk with some of the people we've had on the show over the past couple of years about what they're doing now and what they've learned from that movement. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about protest music. It's always been an important part of the movement for social change. And today's guest, Kevin Vance, says it's more relevant than ever and needed now more than ever. Kevin is the host and producer of the popular program, A Patchwork Quilt. It airs on Saturdays on KALW at 5 p.m. He's been producing it since 1991. And we've got full lines. We'll have one open in just a couple minutes. You can give us a call. What makes a great protest song? What are some of your favorites? 866-798-8255. If you're a musician, we'd love to hear from you. And you can also email your favorite song to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Marlene in San Francisco. Hi, Marlene. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. I love it. I'm wondering, it's so pertinent to what you're talking about. I'm producing a Phil Oaks song night here, speaking of protest music. I'm wondering if I might speak, just mention
please
the details.
Yes.
So Sunny Oaks is coming out, Kim and Reggie Harris, Carolyn Hester, James Lee Stanley, Aileen Vance, and Zach Stevenson. And it's at St. Cyprian's Church, sponsored by the former Noe Valley Music Series, now SF Live Arts. And it's Saturday, November 16th at 8 p.m.
Great. And so
I'll send a million people there.
Oh, thank you.
Kevin, we'll talk about it on a show.
Pardon me?
Kevin, we'll talk about it on a show.
Great. Yeah. Maybe I can connect with you about that.
Please.
Yeah, I will. So that was it, and There But For Fortune, and I
oh, yes.
There But For Fortune, I think, is the first I heard of Phil Oaks way back, and I think good protest music is really reaches into a kind of universal, timeless realm. Anyway,
all right.
thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marlene. We'll put information on our website right after the show. Let's go next to Laura in Oakland. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Laura.
Cool. Hi, I love both your shows. Thank you so much for entertaining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All of the time. on our long commutes over the Bay Bridge.
Entertaining.
Oh,
thank you. I like that word, Laura. Thank you.
It is entertainment. It's entertainment as well as education, too. As well as, you know, motivating people, too.
That's what I love about it. That's why I'm calling. Just two songs to throw into the ring. I don't really think they require any analysis on my part, but feel free to chat about them. Stevie Wonder's Live for the City.
Yes, Living for the City. I love that.
I know, and it's, every time you hear it, it's just, you just, I don't know, and I don't have that personal experience, but it just takes me right there.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing. I don't think a lot of people think of him as a political singer. You know, he often gets thought of his more lighter songs that are more popular, but some of the songs are, you know, really incredible. That's all.
Stevie Wonder, what was the second song? What was?
Same thing, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On.
Oh, and Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. Yes, exactly. Those are excellent songs. And again, those were songs that were able to be in the mainstream, where people who wouldn't ordinarily listen to protest songs would be able to hear them. So we were lucky enough for them to be part of the regular culture as well. Stevie Wonder, brilliant guy, and we'll always miss Marvin.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Laura. She just reminded me for some reason of Living Color, Open Letter to a Landlord. That's one of my favorites.
Yes, I got to listen to that again.
Yeah, and you know, Living Color was at the Fillmore about 6 months ago. Such a good show. And they're going to be back at the Fillmore the last weekend in October before Halloween.
Okay.
They've been around for a long time and they're so good.
They are good.
Yeah, treat yourself. I mean, they go from the blues to heavy metal in seconds. So good. Speaking of, Henry writes and says protest songs do not have to be folksy. Mm-hmm. He recommends Lies by the Waifs and just a couple of the lyrics. You read the paper, watch the news, and think you're well informed. Well, I got some news for you, my friend. That headline that you read, the story that broke, it was a scandal. Yeah, a scam. Political masterstroke. Tell you what they want you to hear. Close your eyes and open your ears. I love it. Thank
Brilliant.
You, Henry. And you're right, because there's a lot of great protest songs that are not folksy.
That's
like
right.
System of a Down, another favorite. A ton of political songs about prisons, for example, about war. Pearl Jam is coming out with a new album in a couple weeks.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, it's basically Eddie Vedder said that it's his message to the world about his anger about what's happening in the world. He basically said if your eyes are open and you think about what's going on, you can be angry in just seconds. And I like that they're really honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that they're still political, because a lot of the more mainstream, I mean, I wouldn't call them mainstream, although I guess that they are now, but some of them don't take chances because there's a very heavy price to pay, right?
Easily. Sometimes when an artist gets political, then they start getting shouted down, such as what happened to the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
I'm thinking also of the Greek rapper, the rapper in Greece who was murdered by the fascists, the Golden Dawn, and it took his murder for a lot of those guys to get rounded up and put in jail and charged with thuggery and everything bad that really should happen to them. But there was a point to all that.
Well, I wanted to just mention, so the Dixie Chicks, a couple years back, well, during the George W. Bush
exactly
era.
Great story there.
Yeah. Natalie Maine said that her group was ashamed to be from the same state.
That's
as
right.
W. And they were in Texas and they got booed. Clear Channel banned them. I mean, they paid a heavy price for that.
The story I heard was they actually said that in London.
Oh, in London.
They
okay,
said it
I
in London,
it
but You're that's right. okay. But the, but because of the advent of YouTube, that things like that can travel around so quickly that the word got around that they had said those things, and they received a lot of flack from the top and the bottom, from people who couldn't hear that.
How do you think that affected musicians?
It can kill them sometimes. It can ruin their careers sometimes, and it's a major risk for anybody to take. And no matter what time in history, even if it happened in the great glorious 60s, that sometimes people can get too political and they get ignored after a while. There are some people that we never heard of just because we roll our eyes. I mean, the documentary on the Detroit singer Sixto Rodriguez. We didn't know about him in America. He only made two records, and it took a bunch of people in South Africa who had listened to his records to kind of revive him. Otherwise, you put his records on, a lot of people would say, oh God, another Dylan imitator.
Hmm.
But sometimes enough is enough, and sometimes too much is an unhealthy thing.
Well, much respect to Natalie Maines, the former singer of Dixie Chicks, because she's out with a new album now called Mother. It's Mother from Pink Floyd.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And she also sings a lot of Eddie Vedder songs. But she's still very political. She's not backing down at all.
That's a wonderful song of hers, too.
Yeah.
And she's coming to Hardly Strictly.
She'll be at Hardly Strictly. She's also playing in Napa over the weekend. And you can check out yourcallradio.org for the schedule. We've got full lines, and we'll have Billy Bragg on as soon as we clear up a couple of lines. So let's go to Paul in Oakland. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, thanks. A lot of interesting comments. I'm a musician and a songwriter, and I spent probably about 20 years from 81 to 2001 playing in a band that did a lot of benefits. And, you know, I kind of challenge the idea that protest music can have, you know, can make social change. I think what it does is it's solidarity. I'd prefer music of solidarity, social consciousness, political music to protest song. And I think, you know, part of what our band did is we played benefits for groups that were activists, and it was kind of a way of recharging the batteries of the activists and getting them to feel the sense of solidarity. I'm not sure, you know, mainstream artists that do, you know, some political protest songs, whether all they do is, you know, make people feel good momentarily. Does that sense of solidarity translate into activism? I really don't know. I mean, that I think is an open question, and I think, you know, you have mainstream artists, I'd say one of the best, you know, politically conscious lyricists and songwriters is Bob Marley, and he
made,
you know, a lot of political impact through his music. And then you have, you know, people at the grassroots level who not only do the music but put themselves on the line at protests, get arrested, do civil disobedience, that kind of stuff, which is different than some of the people that might be popular or mainstream. But, you know, I think that there's political music that, you know, raises consciousness to a degree. Does that translate into activism or just a sense of solidarity? And, you know, yeah, that's great that a lot of people feel this way like I do. And
yeah. You know, that's a great question for Billy Bragg, because he often talks about that when he's interviewed. So when we get him on the line, we will ask him that question. And thank you so much for calling in, Paul. Let's go next to Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy.
Yeah, hi there. Well, speaking about blacklisting, we can always remember the Weavers.
Love them. Grew up on them.
Yes, grew up on them, too. Also, I wanted to mention a very interesting phenomenon in the Bay Area called the Rock and Solidarity Labor Heritage Corps.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, they perform, do what your last caller was talking about. Solidarity's in their name, of course. But they go to events to kind of inspire and infuse people with maybe the ideas they already have, but just give them a little more courage and sense of solidarity. And one more thing I like to plug is your own Africa Mix.
Lovely. Great show. Great show.
Yes, because Emmanuel Nadeau often plays political music, the music that kept the anti-apartheid music movement alive and things like that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Judy. Thank you for calling in.
That's Thursday night starting at 9 o'clock here on 91.7 and on KLW.org.
Yes.
Africa Mix.
And Kevin Vance's show, A Patchwork Quilt, airs on Saturdays on KALW at 5 p.m. And now I would like to welcome Billy Bragg to the show. Billy is a British-born singer, songwriter, and activist. His music blends elements of folk music, punk rock, and protest songs. And he will be performing at Amoeba Records in Upper Haight, San Francisco, Saturday at 3, and then at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and it is free. Mm. Billy Bragg, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. Thank you for joining us. So we've been talking about protest music for about 40 minutes. We have so many examples, a ton of calls and emails. And, you know, you often are asked about this when you do your interviews. What are your thoughts? I mean, you've been doing this for a while. What are your thoughts on the current state of protest music?
Well, this is a common question, because obviously in the 20th century, protest music was often at the forefront of political developments among young people. But I think what you have to understand was that in the 20th century, music was the only social medium that was easily available to young people. When I was 19 years old and I wanted to say something about the world, you know, no one was asking me to, you know, write in the newspapers or come on the radio and talk about it. I had to learn to play guitar, write songs, and go out and do gigs. And through our music, we spoke to one another, and also to our parents' generation. It was that was the medium. Music was a social identifier. You know, an album, 12 by 12, walking down the street without showing people who you were, who you were into. That was, you know, that was the only really way we had of talking to the world. Of course, now, if I was 19 years old, I have a number of opportunities open to me. I can blog, I can make a film relatively cheaply, put it on YouTube, start a Facebook page, get a Twitter campaign going. So I think the idea of learning to play guitar and writing songs and going out and doing gigs is quite a high bar for to ask for people now. You have to be pretty desperate to want to do that.
Hmm. Well, and I often think about this because I go to a lot of music festivals and I often want more from the band. You know, please make a statement. I mean, is that fair to expect from a musician?
I think it is. I mean, you know, there's no point in me coming all the way from the United Kingdom to the United States of America at a time when you're having a huge debate over universal healthcare and not talking about our perspective on that. Both our experience with universal healthcare and also our incredulity that you've not developed a system that that you know ensures that people get the healthcare they need free at point of use, which almost every other developed country has. So, you know, I've been talking about that every night. I mean, your government is shut down at the moment over this issue.
Right.
So I think, you know, it will be, for me, it would be churlish not to talk. I talk to people about it in cafes, you know, if you get into a conversation with people. Because when you're traveling around the world, you know, as long as you get off the bus occasionally and don't live in a complete bubble, there's amazing things happening wherever you go. You learn, you know, I was in Washington State earlier this year, and I learned that at the last election they voted in favor of equal marriage and the legalization of marijuana, which is incredible, you know, that there are people in the United States of America who are that progressive, because obviously, you know, unfortunately the loudest voice coming out of America for those of us abroad tends to be, you know, controlled by Rupert Murdoch, who also has, you know, he has a big TV channel in our country, so there's a lot of overlap between Fox and Sky, so you know we hear that voice, unfortunately. And many of my friends on the left in the United Kingdom who don't have the privilege that I do to travel around the US and talk to progressive people at shows, they you know, it unfortunately underscores their prejudices against the, you know, reactionary idea of the United States of America. I think there was as many progressive people in the U.S. as there are in any other country I've ever been
to.
Yeah. How do you decide where to put your focus and how much energy to put on political issues?
Well, I think you've got an opportunity. Sometimes something comes along that you know that there's an issue there that, you know, your involvement could make a difference. For instance, there was a rally at the University of Minnesota while I was passing through Minneapolis last week, where the workers at the university were defending their rights to health care, their insurance. And I happened to be in town that day. I wasn't doing anything at 1 o'clock, and I knew that the show at the Cedar in Minneapolis was already sold out. So I knew that if I went and played to that gig, more people would potentially come. So, I happened to be in town on the right day. So, it's a confluence of circumstances that led me to be there. But when it's just down to me personally, I would write a song about something if I felt I had a perspective that wasn't being reflected broadly in the discussion that was going on. That would be my this is just an example. It's not pertinent politically, but last year I got asked to take part in a program about the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic and to write a song for the program. And I kept thinking to myself, you know, how are you going to write a song about the Titanic that isn't overshadowed by Celine Dion? So in the end, I ended up writing a song about the iceberg. Because I thought, you know, that's a perspective you never hear from. And everybody loved the song. You know, everyone thought it was an interesting, valid song. So I think as someone who wants to make a comment, a topical comment or a political comment, The bottom line should be that you're adding something to the debate that isn't being said elsewhere, rather than just underscoring everyone's assumptions.
We had a caller earlier, Billy, Paul, who wanted to challenge the notion that protest music has any real effect on politics and social change. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that we need to dispel the idea from the 1960s that music can change the world. That's not been my experience, both as a consumer of music and as a performer. But clearly music does play an important role. And as an individual, the first ever political activism I took part in was Rock Against Racism in 1978. And at the time, I was working in an office where there was a lot, among my workmates, there was a lot of casual racism, sexism, homophobia. And I was the youngest person in the office, and I was embarrassed by this, but I didn't speak up because I felt I was in a minority. And then I went to Rock Against Racism. The Clash were playing, they were my favourite band, were playing at Rock Against Racism. So I went along to the concert. And when I got to the park at the end of the march where the concert was happening, there were 100,000 kids just like me. And I realised that day that my generation were going to define themselves in opposition to discrimination of all kinds in the way the previous generation had defined itself in opposition to the Vietnam War. Our issue was going to be discrimination. So when I went back to work on Monday morning, I knew I wasn't in a minority, and I began to stand up to these sexist comments and what the things that these guys were saying. And the crucial thing you have to understand, though, it wasn't the clash that gave me the courage of my convictions. It was being in that audience and singing those songs together and punching the air together and realizing I wasn't the only one who cared about this issue. And I think that's what music does. Music allows you to stand together in communion with people from your community and to sing these songs and to applaud these ideas. You know, tonight here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, when we sing There Is Power in a Union, people who are proud of their union membership will sing and maybe raise their fists in the air, and other people who've wondered about unions might take away something from that. But I feel I have a responsibility always to send the audience away with the understanding that if they want to change the world, the responsibility is theirs, not mine. My job is just to make them feel like they're not alone. That's what Rock Against Racism did for me.
Billy Bragg is a British-born singer, songwriter, and activist. He'll be performing a free show, two free shows this weekend, at Amoeba Records in Upper Haight on Saturday at 3 o'clock, and then at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival this weekend, Sunday at 3 o'clock, and we'll have information at yourcallradio.org. And Billy, can you stay with us for a few more minutes to go through
a few callers? Yeah. I'm happy to. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we're also joined by Kevin Vance, host and producer of A Patchwork Quilt, a folk music program airing on Saturdays, KALW, at 5 o'clock. And let's go next to Aaron Potts. Aaron is executive director of Air Traffic Control. It's a group that works with musicians to help them further their social justice work. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so thank you for calling. So what are your thoughts about the state of protest music? What's really exciting you right now?
Well, what's exciting to me is that protest music isn't just from the 60s. Every generation has their own protest music. We actually just released a protest song remix on Tuesday around immigration called The Jailer Part 2 with a bunch of artists that we work with. Macklemore's Same Love, which is a song he recorded during the campaign in Washington State last year, which passed ultimately and legalized same-sex marriages in Washington State, that won by 7.4%, which is about 200,000 voters, and most of those were young people. That song is also, in the top 100 charts. It has 84 million views on YouTube. So there is a lot of very current and exciting protest music happening, and I think that it's important to recognize that, and it does have an impact. What happened around the Same Love release and that referendum changed a lot.
Well, thanks for calling in, Aaron. Aaron is with Air Traffic Control, a group that works with artists focusing on social justice work. We'd love to hear that. We'll find it and put it on the site. Billy, who are some of your favorite artists that are focusing on the issues that you care about?
Currently focusing on issues that we care about.
Yeah.
There's a number of young artists in the UK, people like Grace Petrie, who's a sort of singer-songwriter, more in the folky mode, who's writing amazing songs about the economic situation we have there. There's a guy who performs under the name Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly, who equally has a strong take on the austerity that we find. But there are other artists who you might not expect to be doing. I mean, Macklemore is not really the sort of person who you think of as a protest singer, is he? So artists are using the platform they have to talk about some issues. There's an artist in the UK who had a hit with a song called The A-Team. I've totally blanked his name now. This is really embarrassing. Ed Sheeran. Thank you. Ed Sheeran, sorry. We're driving all night all the way through Pennsylvania, and I've just woke up in a disused steel mill. Ed Sheeran, his first hit was a song called The A-Team, which, if you see the video on YouTube, it's basically about a young prostitute who takes heroin and dies. And the video is all about her and her experience, and it's had, 40 million hits. So don't tell me the young people aren't interested in songs that have something to say. I think what's missing is a protest music scene. I think the real interest in protest music is happening, the angry music now, what we would have identified perhaps more before with punk rock is more really happening in urban music, in hip hop. That's certainly in the UK. Right. That's where the edge seems to be in music at the moment.
Well, we've got time for a few more callers, and I just want to read a couple emails. Armand says the most effective are those like an anthem, like Jefferson Airplane's "You Are the Crown of Creation," or Crosby, Still, Nash and Young's "Four Dead in Ohio."
Yes.
"Which Side Are You On" is a favorite, says Judy. It brings tears to my eyes. Michelle says, "I love all kinds of protest music, but want to give a shout out to Casey Neal and his song Dancing on the Ruins of Multinational Corporations."
Ooh.
That sounds great. Thank you for the emails.
I've got to find that one.
Yeah, let's hear next from Paul in Santa Cruz. Hi, Paul.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it's Paul A.
Oh, hi.
Hi, hi. Yeah, I'm an independent filmmaker, and I've been working with a lot of African artists, and in particular Alpha Blondy, who is one of the great singers of Africa, who sings in six languages about world peace.
Love him.
And his most famous song probably is Jerusalem, where he sings about Christians, Jews, and Muslims all coming together in peace and harmony and living together. And I would like to point out that, you know, Lucky Dube, who is another one of the great singers of Africa, who was assassinated, I believe he was assassinated because of what he sang about burying apartheid. Before he was singing, both Alpha and Lucky were singing about apartheid before Mandela was released. And that was a dangerous period in the history of people speaking out about apartheid. And every song that these two singers and many others, like Thomas Mafumo, who was put into prison many, many times in his protests against various governments, including the racist government of former, you know, Rhodesia. And then you have
Great man from Zimbabwe, Thomas Mafuno. Yes.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Paul, for calling. I just realized we're almost out of time. So thank you for calling. And Billy, final thoughts from you. What's in store for the future of protest music?
Well, it takes on many different levels. I was just in Los Angeles, California, a couple of weeks ago, working with other artists around the issue of attitudes towards prisoners, particularly in California. I'm working with Wayne Kramer from the MC5 on a project called Jail Guitar Doors. As musicians, we're trying to get musical instruments into prisons because we know that playing a musical instrument can help you to momentarily transcend your surroundings. So I think it's that level. It's individuals working on a single issue rather than a mass movement of protest. Because there's plenty of people out there like Tom Morello from Rage playing as the Night Watchman, you know, Steve Earle, he'll be at Hardly Strictly this weekend, you know. We're still writing political songs, but it's not just a whole movement as there was in the 60s.
Well, much Thank respect, you, and we look forward to seeing you, Billy Bragg, this weekend. Billy Bragg will be performing Saturday at Amoeba, 3 o'clock, at Hardly Strictly Sunday at 3. Thank you so much, Billy Bragg. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you, and thank you, Kevin Vance, host of A Patchwork Quilt.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of the government shutdown. How are reporters shaping the conversation about the federal budget, the debt ceiling, and budget cuts? We'll also talk about coverage of U.S.-Iran relations. We'll be joined by The New Yorker's Laura Secor, Alternet's Joshua Holland, and the Center for Public Integrity's Dave Leventhal. What did you see the best reporting this week? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. We'll be right back.